Hello, this is Jen Ives, your host for the Peak Trans podcast. That is the podcast that you are listening to. I don't know if you know that. Well, you must know it because you must have clicked on it, unless, I don't know, maybe you've got like an autoplay feature on your podcast app. And then in that case, it was good that I told you. Hello, welcome to the Peak Trans podcast. Knowledge is power. Now you understand where you are. Thank you to anybody who listened to the first episode with Alistair Beckett King. I got a lot of nice feedback on that one. I appreciate it. And I'm anticipating a lot of nice feedback on this episode as well. In this episode of Peak Trans, I spoke with the wonderful Charlie Dinkin. Charlie is a comedian. She's a writer. She's a producer. She's a director. Basically, she does it all. She's been in her life. She's been a bin man. She's been a tree surgeon. Okay, those last two might not be 100% accurate, but she could do that if she wanted to. She could do anything she puts her mind to. She could easily be a bin man or a tree surgeon. Anyway, Charlie wrote and starred in the critically acclaimed Seance Cast podcast for Hattrick Productions, which I might have been in and written some bits for. I don't know. I 100% did do that. She has a production company called Daddy's Super Yacht, and also she worked for the BBC last year, which is really exciting. So she's legit. She's a real person. I really enjoyed my chat with Charlie. She's very insightful. She's got a lot of wisdom, she's got a lot of like proper dead, like clever, deep thoughts about feminism and her experience as a woman. And you'll see how good it is. Just a note about this episode is slightly longer than the last episode. I do try to keep the podcasts down to less than an hour, because I do understand that you are most likely a millennial and have very short attention span, and you know, you need everything short for you, otherwise you wander off into a road. But on this occasion, it's just a little bit longer, okay? And the reason, there's two reasons for that. The first reason is because, well, this was just such an insightful conversation, and Charlie had so many hot takes, I just couldn't bear to cut any of them out. The podcast was actually 2.5 hours, so I did cut out a few, but there was just some certain things that I couldn't leave out. And the second reason is because I've been very busy this week and I just couldn't be bothered to edit it anymore. But you probably didn't need to know that reason. The first reason was good enough. You can follow Charlie on Twitter at Charlie Dinkin. And you can go on her website if you want to, charliedinkin.com. And I tell you what, wait around to the end of the podcast and I'll deliver some more updates for you, and we'll have a nice outro. What do you say? Anyway, I hope you enjoy the podcast and I will see you on the other side. Bye.
In a nice-ish flat, and it could be really nice, and like every so often when I clean my flat, and I really mean I clean it every so often, I'm like, wow, imagine living in a clean, tidy home. Like I'm like some sort of fabulous socialite, and then I never clean it again for another 6 months and it's just horrible the whole rest of the time.
Well, you know, you have a lovely flat. I've been in it. I can say that your flat is very, very nice. My flat, well, not my flat. My flat is fine, but my particular room that is my bedroom. The other day I was laying in bed and I found soil in my bed. That's the kind of level that I'm at. I do have a lot of plants, but I don't have that many plants to justify why there's like soil in my bed. But
wow.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about what we came here for. Charlie, welcome to the Peak Trans podcast. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you for having me. A joy and a pleasure.
Shifted into like professional.
Yeah, I heard.
Yeah, no, it's professional. do you know what, I'm sure you do, but do you know what Peak Trans means?
Do you not know? I don't actually. I think I have actually seen the video of you explaining it, but I've smoked so much weed, I can't remember anything anymore. It's like a horrible thing that people refer, I don't know. It's something about a bad element of being trans.
Yeah, well, so basically what it is, so I found it a couple of months ago. I hadn't heard of it before. It's basically, I think it might have started on some kind of what's that website called where
4chan.
No, oh. Tumblr.
4chan's the only one I've heard of where I assume all horrible things come from.
No, I was going to I was trying to describe Tumblr, but I couldn't get the words to explain what it is. I just realized that I've had Tumblrs and I've used Tumblr and I still don't really know exactly what it is. It's like a, it's kind of like Pinterest, isn't it? Like a
picture blog.
Yeah, but it started on there basically, I think. And basically, it was made by, I assume, gender-critical kind of turfy people. And it basically just means, like, that moment when you have reached your sort of, like, peak and you've seen through the veil and you've had enough, finally, of sort of, like, the trans lobby. And the
what?
You feel like it's gone too far. So people submit their peak trans stories, which is like the moment when they'd had enough and they walked away and turned to gender criticalism. So it's like you'll read things and it'll be like, do you know what, I used to have no problem with trans people, I knew what they were, you know, I used to know one, they used to come into my salon and all this kind of thing, but then they started demanding to use the toilets and that was it, like I had enough. Like, so that's basically the vibe of it.
It really is, like, learning that is one of those moments where you're like, you know, so, do you remember that saying that was like, even if you could speak to a lion, you wouldn't be able to understand what they're saying. Like, even if you both spoke English, because their frame of reference is so different to yours that it's like you'd have no common ground. Because, I mean, I just think peak trans sounds like the moment someone achieves their peak transness. And like, it's like, yeah, I thought I was trans and it turns out I'm definitely trans. Like, that to me is what
I'm
I would
glad
assume
you said
trans
that. Meant. Well, yeah, I mean, that's basically what I'm trying to do with it. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to take back. I'm going to reclaim it, you know, because I've always wanted to reclaim something. So I'm like, I'm going to reclaim that. And
This is it. This is the one, because the space in its symbolic form for it to mean that is there. It's more of a leap for it to mean the other thing, I think.
And it's slowly working. Like, basically, there's a YouTube channel called Peak Trans, which is basically just this gender critical woman. And it's basically like a very sort of old fashioned style YouTube vlog. You know, she vlogs from her very, very dark sort of like
from the dungeon. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, from a dungeon with a webcam from like 1996. And basically she rants about all the things that trans people are doing. And I unfortunately do not have as many subscribers as her. She's doing significantly better than me.
Then but who's winning the culture war, Jen?
Exactly.
Who's winning the culture war?
But she did start a lot before me, so give me some time, you know.
Yeah, fair.
But I know I'm riling some people up because I do get comments occasionally saying, you're a man and I think I'll follow the original Peak Trans YouTube, please. That's fine, you can do that, but yeah, it's getting there. I'm getting.
But maybe some people are also being like accidentally sent your way by looking for that, and then they're like, "Oh wow, this is a fully formed, funny, interesting human being saying something that isn't completely fucking insane." Maybe I'll hang out here instead. It's much less dungeony.
I mean, that's what I hope, you know, because the internet is all about clickbait, isn't it? I want to reel people in with lies. And,
yeah, you got to play that game. That's fundamentally tricksy is the top line of the internet. Yeah, I think it's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like your branding.
What is your peak trans moment? Do you have a peak trans moment where you finally thought, this is enough?
This is too much transness for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, no. Not really. It's so hard for me to think like that because, okay, so here's my background with it. I did grow up in, I think, quite a conservative environment, but I almost didn't realize it was very conservative until I was older, because also it's like, I went to an international school, like a British international school, but in the UK. So I was like exposed to like a lot of people from different places, but ultimately I did just live in a town in England. I'm from like quite a posh area. I mean, like, you know where I grew up in Sevenoaks in Kent, and it's like a pretty white, posh, I think quite repressed area now. But like, my dad is Jewish and my mum grew up Catholic, and neither of them are from that area. So I always had this sense of like being that like outsiders existed. And I also was like bullied in school and sometimes felt like an outsider and whoever. Anyway, all I'm saying is like I had some like compassionate understanding that there was such thing as a mainstream existence, yeah. And then variety from that. But I never ever met any trans people ever while I was growing up. I do remember once being in, I don't know if this is an answer to your question, but anyway, this is my journey with it. But so I remember once.
To be honest with you, that question, it was more of a joke anyway. My next question was going to be, who was the first trans person you met, which you're kind of covering.
Yeah, which is like.
But do go on, please, because it's interesting.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, that is kind of what I'm coming up to. So all I'm saying is like, didn't really, when I was little, I do remember once being in a shop on holiday with my, so my brother must have been really little, like 5 or 6. And there was the person who owned the shop was like an older man who had nail varnish on. And my brother like clocked it. And outside my dad was like, oh, like super chill, but was just like, I guess he's still like dressed up from last night or something. And that was the first time I was like, oh, a human person can do a different, not so masculine thing in another part of their life that I don't know about. And so I was like, all right, that opened that up for me. And then when I went to university, I met lots of trans people and I obviously made like the same, like I made mistakes I was embarrassed about in the way that I don't think I ever really did anything horrible, but I certainly like do remember being like, oh, this is crazy and different to anything I never ever knew before. But straight away, I was like, these are literally people who are allowed to live their lives exactly as they please, like everyone else does in so many variations that are not to do with gender, but to do with other things as well. And I just was chill with that. I literally have never had, I've just like never had a problem with it. I don't have an issue.
I know. But it's interesting to me that you say that you met loads of trans people at university, because like, and I believe you, obviously, but my experience at university, as somebody who came out at university in my second year, I knew none. Like, that's the crazy thing.
Yeah.
Like, there weren't any, like, in my uni that I knew of anyway, at least.
And I think... That sounds more statistically, well, I don't know if it sounds more statistically likely, but I think that probably is a lot of people's experiences. Sorry, I interrupted you there.
No, it's okay. It's just, I mean, I don't want to say anything as bold as to say like, oh, I set a precedent, because I'm sure I didn't. I'm sure I wasn't the first or the last person there to transition. But when I did, it did feel like there were no guidelines in place and no one really knew what to do with me.
For real.
It does seem weird to me that you met lots of them, but I think that's cool. I think you're lucky to have met a variety of people.
I'm very lucky, and I'll tell you why it happened though. I went to university in New York, and I don't think you can like live in New York and have a good time in New York and be like going out in New York without engaging with the fact that like New York is a bit of a beacon for LGBTQ people, and like I learned about Stonewall pretty early on, and I would like go there, and I would like at one point volunteered for like an HIV outreach. They were like running drug trials, so I like,
yeah.
So first of all, it's like being in New York. So that
I've seen Paris is burning. I know all about
exactly.
It.
So it's like that draws people in. Secondly, I went to a women's college, which I think not only attracts a certain demographic of people, which is like on the one hand Orthodox Jews and on the other hand like lesbians. It's like very much that's the spread, and also I think a lot of overlap. But I think it's like that did also attract people who were asking questions about gender of themselves and wanted to be in that environment for whatever reason. And so there were trans people that went to my university, and Just before I got there, I think they'd been having this big conversation about like, should trans people be allowed to come to a women's college or graduate from a women's college? And my understanding of it actually is that I think they handled it quite well in the end. I think they made like a really big mistake with this one person, and then who they made leave. And then they really reflected on it and they changed it, and they landed on like, you have to identify as a woman when you join the university. And they were like, we don't really care what people do the rest of the time. But it's like, if you want to come to a women's college, you should be a woman in whatever sense that means to you when you join. So I think that attracted a lot of people. They were the main two things. But I'm not saying I think like I'm not imagining every university is like full of tons of trans people, but I do think for whatever reason.
Well, they are now. I mean, come on, it's not that. You can't move for them these days. I say not having stepped in a university for like, well, God, I don't even want to think about how long it's been. It's been a while.
Did you? Am I allowed to ask you questions on your podcast?
No, yeah.
Did you know any other trans people at university or?
No, I didn't know any when, like, at all when I came out. I was, you know, surrounded by nice people. So, like, very, very accepting sort of geeky people that I went to uni with. But no, I'm sure there were other trans people. I mean, there have to have
been. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wasn't the first. But the thing is, yeah, like, my frame of reference of it was only really through my own sort of like research, mainly YouTube, to be honest with you. Like, I know, I don't mean I discovered trans people through YouTube, because I know there's, because I have to say that, because there's a lot of people that believe that the amount of trans YouTubers now and
it's like influencing,
yeah, they think it's like making people trans, but actually for me it was just an outlet to see that like a life was possible.
Yeah,
just like vloggy sort of updates on people, like, you know, going through various processes and stuff. But at uni, like, no, I didn't really know about it. I had a really nice kind of like, I was gonna say tutor, but that's not, is that what you call it at uni? Like a teacher, I guess is the word.
So it was an academic one, or like a pastoral?
Like a head of department. And cool. Her name was Val. And she, shout out to Val, she was really good. I think she's a lesbian. And she was just, yeah, she was brilliant. She was really good with it all. But that whole time for me is a bit of a blur, to be honest with you. It was a very stressful time. So I've just kind of like, yeah, it's just a big blur in my mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, there were none that I know of. I remember when I was at college, way before then, like a community college called Lewisham College. I remember there was somebody who was like genderly ambiguous, and like, I think they might have even possibly even been intersex. And I remember like sort of being like, oh, that's interesting kind of thing. But yeah, that's about it, really. I didn't really know anyone, so.
Do you know what? I knew someone at school who was, I don't even know why I would have known this information, because I think her gender pronouns are she, but I'll say they for safety. They in later life have become a big campaigner for intersex awareness. So I know now that it's something that they speak about, but maybe they were speaking about it then anyway. But definitely becoming aware of the existence of intersex people and like understanding what that meant, I was like, I mean, that cracks a lot wide open, doesn't it? When you've never heard of that before and then you know that someone can be intersex, it's like, how can you go back to being like, no, they can't? Like, people just are.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, like, the way that people like to think about sex specifically, like, I think, is like, they like to think of it as if, like, there are men, there are women, and then there are occasionally intersex people, which is, I mean, true, but also a kind of a weird way to look at the world, like quite a simplistic way to look at the world, because if there are intersex people, then I guess trans people aren't making a claim that they are intersex, but I guess they are kind of trying to say, well, obviously, like pretty much everything else in the natural world, sex and sexuality being separate, but they also are like sort of on a sliding scale, or can be.
Yeah, there's just variation, isn't there?
Divergent.
Like,
yeah,
we know that variation exists across everything in the natural world. I know it doesn't, you don't really touch on this stuff in school, but I mean, you don't study a lot of practical things in school, and you still get the seeds of like that these things are conceptually possible. I also I just was like really lucky. I went to a school where you could like do philosophy and like theory of knowledge and all these things that were just like, oh, maybe challenge dogma and facts, and like maybe everything you're told when you're 12 is not actually the full and complete story of the world. But I don't think everyone gets that.
Philosophy is so important. Like I didn't do it at school. And in fact, you know, shamefully, probably like it was quite a long time until I really understood what philosophy was, you know, because it's not a subject that was taught to me. It's not something that you hear talked about much in my kind of circles. But so it's one of those things that I kind of sought out on my own. Like I first started getting into like existentialist philosophy and like feminist philosophy and like lots of stuff. And yeah, like it's amazing. Like obviously it can confuse things more sometimes, but that's sort of like the point of it, right? So
completely
on the subject of what I kind of wanted to talk to you about, like I think what these confusions come down to really is sort of like definitions. You know, when you take into consideration the fact that like we have like a language, like a shared language that we communicate with, but it feels like there's like a large group of people that very much want to conservatively keep our language as it was. And I find it strange because meanings and language and words, they change all the time, and everything is constantly changing. So this idea of like holding on to these really old fashioned ways of viewing the world, it just seems like the weirdest thing to me at the moment. Like that, it seems like there's a real sort of like unintentionally conservative sort of
completely view. It's like a fear of change is such a human drive, I think, and fear of yourself and what you've built up as the image of yourself being challenged, even when it's like the thing you're projecting yourself on has absolutely nothing to do with you. But yeah, wanting things to be as they were, I think it's quite a strong human impulse for some reason.
Again, it's just counter to the way that things are for everything else. You know, it's like people want to see change in various places, but then there are certain subjects where they absolutely don't want to see change, and they, because I think like you said, it challenges the way that they perceive themselves. You know, it's for like whether you're gay or lesbian or trans or bisexual or whatever, when you come out, I think you're telling people about something about yourself, but you're also you affect them as well. Like,
yeah, of course. Like,
it changes how they see themselves in relation to you. So,
and it makes
anyway,
things, but no, I think it's true. And one thing I think is like really, I reflect on this a lot with for myself, but it's like, sometimes it makes the option of something possible for someone that they didn't think was possible. And it might not be that they want to be that or they want to do anything about it. But I think an example of this that it is around sort of this like Me Too conversation, where you saw a lot of older women almost like being unhappy about the dialogue and just being like, you know, you couldn't really control this in the past, things were just like this, everyone's making fuss, actresses are asking for it, you know what I mean, like that kind of dialogue. Yeah. And you felt like, oh, this is because you thought you were playing in one type of game, and now you've realized because of this that maybe that the rules of that game weren't fair. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah, it does make sense.
Really try and be compassionate to like TERFs, and I say that word disparagingly because I find it very difficult to do, but where I can meet people partway on it is that I do understand that these types of women have felt like they were fighting one type of battle and one type of challenge. I think they've like misidentified who their enemy is, but whatever. They thought they were fighting one type of battle, and now the rules have changed for that battle. And it's like, what does that mean for everything that they did and also everything that they felt they sacrificed in their lives? Yeah. And it's much harder to be like, oh, like, I don't know. I mean, I think the get out is always to be like, maybe you're just not in control of everything in the world. Like, maybe you've been playing one type of game in a system that was like geared against you in one way, and now the system is geared against other people. But I think people do find it really hard to let that go if they felt like they committed to doing one thing, and now they're like, oh shit, this thing is
like,
not
I understand,
real.
Obviously, I understand that sometimes, when you're thinking purely like logistically, like if you're talking about like a fight, for example, like feminist fight or for racial equality or anything like that, like sometimes it does feel like the simpler option is the more useful and utilitarian or whatever, but
or even it's just the thing that you were already doing and you already had decided to put your effort into. And it's like the new shift, I mean, like intersectionality, I do think now I'm like really comfortable with intersectionality, and I really think it's like at the heart of everything. But like, I do remember a time where that concept, I just hadn't even really heard of it, and it was hard to understand. And sometimes things that are hard to understand are a little bit scary because they make you feel stupid. And it's like,
yeah,
I get
totally
all those things.
I've been thinking a lot about that lately, actually, in the sense of like, you know, I've had plenty of bad ideas in my life, you know, even just regarding like trans issues specifically. You know, there's a whole journey that comes with like self-acceptance and like self-hatred and like misunderstanding as well. Like, this is the other thing, is like, there's loads of shit that I don't understand about science and biology. I mean, there's loads of stuff I don't understand about science, but like specifically talking about biology and stuff, and I had to do research and some, and you know, the more I researched things and the more like I looked into the actual like current sort of scientific consensus, I was like, oh, actually this is a lot more complicated than I even gave it credit for. Where so certain like language and certain things that I just stopped saying, you know.
Like
it's just, it's funny that it's like, for example, right, you know, a lot of people dislike the term cisgendered, right? They're like, oh, you know, you shouldn't call me that because I'm the norm sort of thing, and you're the other, you're the abhorrent. Well, firstly, from like a social point of view, like that's the point of that, of the use of that term, is to kind of like, like in one way I kind of feel like maybe it's, I can see why people dislike it, because what it does is it creates like another, a new binary, which is like cis and trans.
Yeah, I see that.
But I think it's better that that than, because that evens the playing field somewhat. But what I found that was even more interesting that I didn't know is that, like, you know, that kind of terminology, like it's not exclusive to gender or trans thing. Like, it genuinely is like biological terminology. Like cis is literally, I don't know anything about Latin, but I think it's like a Latin word. It's just like the opposite of trans, basically. And whenever you hear trans used, whether it be like trans fat or,
you could just use cis as the opposite.
Exactly. So it's like, I mean, I have like a really dry document. Like, it's not a document, like it's a Wikipedia article, but it's still very dry. It says cis trans isomerism. I'm just gonna read you one little bit. So it goes, no, do you know what? I'm not going to read it, because it's going to make me sound stupid, because I can't understand. The prefixes cis and trans are from Latin.
Yeah, this, and they side, just sit opposite each other. Of,
yeah, this side of and the other side of, respectively. And this scientific document that I've got, this Wikipedia article, it basically just shows
Wikipedia
a lot of,
is science.
It just shows a lot of chemical reactions, and it's just like just talking about.
Yeah, I think it's a really useful word. I think it's like, naming the thing is important. Like, the words are amazing. Words can do things. Like, words are what makes us human and build our world around us. And it's like, there are so many things and so many spaces in our working lexicon that, like, if we could find ways to fill, as soon as you name it, you can, like, define it and talk about it. And, like, I completely agree that there's no, I mean, I don't want to live in a world where there's like normal and abnormal is the like default definition of every possible variation, because it's not accurate to the world in which we live in. And also, it's just like not an interesting way of describing it and analyzing it. And it's like, I am a social scientist. Like, I did an anthropology degree. I have a master's in psychoanalysis. Like, I really am fascinated by the way that we construct the social world around us. And I believe that we do that. So whenever the impulse is between like, can we name this thing? Can we define this thing? Can we discuss this thing? Or can we just put this away because it's how it's been and how it'll always be? It's like, I'm never going to choose option two.
Yeah. No, for sure. Because, so again, like people have this fear. It's like, well, if I acknowledge you as a woman, not me, I'm talking about, then what does that mean for me as the definition that I understand of a woman? And also, like, you hear this, but even from like, trans people who kind of verge a little bit more on the right, maybe, or they have a kind of a gender critical or a kind of medicalist point of view, they will say things like, well, it's important that I not be completely recognized as a woman, because what if I get in an accident and I get rushed to hospital and they need to know what my biology is? Well, that's like, in my mind, there is a way to have both. Do you know what I mean?
I think,
like,
so.
It's not like, again, it's all just to do with words again, which is kind of why I wanted to talk to you specifically about this, about the subject of womanhood.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because this is the main thing that's being like debated a lot now, is this idea of like, what is womanhood, what does it mean to be a woman, and who has the right to claim that as an identity? Does it require girlhood? Does, you know, all of these complicated questions. So first, what I wanted to I mean, I'm not expecting you to answer any of those questions.
I have opinions. I have feelings. Let's do it.
Yeah, I want to hear your opinions. But also, I want to know how you perceive that word and how you see your own gender. Because one thing that I found interesting about getting to know and socialize with cisgender people, because there are none in my family, is it's just like, you know, how do they feel about their gender? Because for me, it's something that I think about, or at least I used to like think about way more, but like I think about it all the time, you know, like it's something that has engulfed my entire life. It's like thinking about my gender. And I just wonder sometimes how much do you, you know, other people think about it. So what is your relationship with your gender?
So I think, I mean, I do spend a lot of time, and I have in my life spent time thinking about what it means to be a woman. And the particular time, well, so I went to a girls' school until I was about 8 or 9, and then I changed to a co-ed primary school. And I really did not, I remember really not enjoying the environment of an all-girls school. And I mean, I'm sure that maybe is like gendered also as maybe something about just like arbitrary segregation and imposing things on you. But I didn't like it from the start. I always liked being in co-ed education. I have a brother. I never felt like I was less capable or intelligent than men around me. I had a group of friends who were like mostly female, who were like really smart girls. And I think even in our school, I was like, these people are just worthwhile people to be around. Like, I like this. I'm not more interested in like being around boys or flattering boys or thinking boys are more interesting. When I went to my women's college, which was like almost an accident for me, I just like really wanted to live in New York and I had this amazing opportunity. They would talk a lot there about like the things, their philosophy of being a woman. And it would be things like if you stood up in a class to speak and you said, or you put your hand up and you said, I'm not really sure, but, or like, oh, I don't know if this is right, but you would be made to say it again, like in an affirmative statement. And their idea about like womanhood and separating women off from other people, from environments with men in it was that women could then take on leadership positions and women could just like be in charge and be allowed to do that without like oppressive patriarchal masculinity around them. But that did not mean that there were no men around, because we were like part of a bigger university and I knew lots of men. So I think the fact that I started being able to like have both and see both in that environment, I was like, all right, there's like a time and a place to acknowledge the limitations and expectations of gender, but also there's ways and possibilities for stepping around that. Yeah. I think as I get older, I am aware of some like biological functions which are in some ways connected to womanhood. Like I have this condition called PMDD, which is around my periods and my like cycle, that I guess is like gendered in its own way, but I also don't believe that like having a period makes you a woman, or like not having a period doesn't, more fundamentally. But yeah, I did a class last summer or 2 summers ago about Jacques Lacan, and it talked in that class about the definition of like masculinity and femininity and men and women, and like not attached to genitals in his view of it. It's like societally imposed. And the definition is like men believe that there's like a closed group of men, and within masculinity it's like everyone wants the phallus, which is like to be the top man, and imagine they could be the top man, and it's like men are closed, men know what men are. And women, and the definition of women is just like open, it's just like not well rounded out, it could be vast, there could be all kinds of women. It's this like open category. And I think you can see that as an issue, and it's like, well, men really know what they are and what they're doing and are the norm, and women are just like the other to them, women are like the Eve to the Adam. Or
yeah,
you can
I
be
have
like
read something about, I think when I was reading Judith Butler's book,
exactly she's Lacanian. That.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. See, I know about philosophy.
She's read Wikipedia.
Yeah, but this idea of like, it being an open category and like the woman is the other to the man and stuff like that.
But then I think it's like, I'd rather be in the open category. Like, the opportunity and the possibility of it being open and the things that are meant to be attached to womanhood are, like, in lots of ways, exciting opportunities to me that I wish more people would elect into, regardless of gender. It's like, I don't really see woman as a bad category or like a category that needs to be protected, or like, I think it's like, if we're going to live in a world where these gender identities exist, people should be allowed to have and choose and want things about being a woman. It's not like you want to be a woman and that's a bad thing. I think it's
for
like
me, it's like, well, yeah, this might sound extreme, I don't know, but like it's for me it's a problem with the way that everything is structured, in the sense that even before you start your life, your sort of identity is being dictated by other people, to the point of, you know, you're born and you're assigned a name, you're given a name.
It's mad crazy, isn't it?
Like, even just thinking about that, it's such a thing that's considered normal in society. But when I think about it, I think, no, I think it would be great if everybody had the choice, maybe when they're like, I don't know, 16, that they get to choose a new name. Like,
I agree.
Free.
I love that. I think it's cool.
Yeah, but this is what I mean, though, because so it's like, when you consider the fact that when anybody is born, you can get into murky details of like what it means to be a man or a woman in terms of like, oh, how many gametes do you have? What's this? What's that? What are your chromosomes? But again, even that is like absurd, because there are variations on all those things too. And the category that you're using to differentiate man and woman is, again, based in language. So if it all comes back to language and based on, you know, our interpretations of I understand why it's important for people to have ideas of sex. I understand that, and I understand that biology is based around categorization, but I just don't trust or like anything that is based on other people's assessment of you. So it's that whole kind of thing of like, yes, a doc, that's why trans people started saying assigned this above. Mm-hmm. It's not a terminology that I use, but I completely get why people say it, because it's making a point. It's saying like, look, it's about autonomy and your right to be who you want to be, regardless of categorization. Like, it's almost like imagining a world where there is no man or woman. And I'm not saying that is a doable thing, but as a thought exercise, it's like, no, you know, this is how I want to view my future in terms of like having every option available. And I think everybody should have that.
Completely.
I find it really interesting that like a lot of people that, like a lot of women that I know who, you know, don't necessarily consider themselves, or to my knowledge, they're not openly, like, they don't consider themselves like trans or anything like that, but they've, you know, taken to changing their sort of like bios on Twitter and things like that to say like, you know, my pronouns are she, her, or they, or that they, mm-hmm. them, and stuff like that, because again, it's not trying to lessen their womanhood, but it's trying to open something. It's like trying to, I don't know what, I'm not 100% sure what that is, but I just find it really interesting, you know.
Well, yeah, like, and it's wanting to have pull those options. Something I was just thinking about, like looking at my name on the screen, is that like I did choose my own name and give myself a name, because like my name is Charlotte Dinkin and was from when I was a child, but then when I was about 11 or 12 I saw some Charlie Chaplin films and I loved him and I loved comedy, and I like the idea of having a nickname, and I was like, I guess I'll have Charlie. And I know that it has been helpful to me over the years that I'm a little bit gender ambiguous in an email. I really think that's real and like tracked and helpful to me, and that's not about my fundamental gender or how I feel like in my daily life, but it's like, oh, the option to be I want the option to be neutral to exist.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I'm chill if anyone wants to like go hard on, I mean, I don't love the idea that anyone's like going really hard on masculinity, because I think that just has its own issues, but I don't really mind that people are like going hard on femininity if that's what really floats their boat.
Sure. Yeah. What's your favorite Charlie Chaplin film, by the way?
The Great Dictator. I think it's the best film ever made. What's yours?
I really like The Kid.
I think. Oh, I know. I really, beautiful.
And I like The Circus as well.
31 years old.
Oh, really? Yeah, but that,
yeah, is that disgusting?
Makes me feel really bad. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I feel horrible. I literally just, I saw a thing on Twitter that was like, what's someone with your name? What were they doing? Someone famous with your name doing when they were your age? And I was like, fucking hell, it's the worst thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I know. But something that's comforting to think is that he was also like marrying like a 15-year-old.
That is
whatever.
True,
so,
isn't
so
it?
So you can always make yourself feel a little bit better.
That is true.
But, you know, those films are beautiful. And I have like a Charlie Chaplin box set that I haven't finished watching through yet. But
it's a shame he did all those marrying teenager things, isn't it? Because it...
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
it
at least he had the decency to marry her, Charlie. Come on.
Her and her. Absolutely loads of them, weren't there?
Yeah. So I mean, Buster Keaton, to my knowledge, didn't do anything.
I thought he was a better person. But yeah, I think it's like... I was talking the other day with someone also about how... I was watching my boyfriend play Grand Theft Auto and I was like, can you play a woman in this game? And I guess at the beginning you can't, you can just play men, but later on you can play women. And I just like really knew in my heart that I'm not willing to play any game where you're like playing a man in a game and they haven't bothered to give the option of a woman, because I already spent my entire life willingly identifying with male characters in films and TV, and I really don't see men doing the opposite. And it's like, if dudes can't be bothered to be interested in female protagonists, then like I'm not gonna play a man in a video game. So maybe
and female
I am
protagonists that aren't conventionally like, you know, busty or like a like men do sometimes like choose to play as women, but I always get the impression that
it's like Lara Croft, like come on, please,
yeah, which is hilarious because I was looking at pictures of like the models of like Lara Croft from like Tomb Raider 1 and 2, and she is just like the most triangular person I've ever seen.
How can
life.
She stand up? The physics don't work.
Yeah, but you can shoot a monkey in the face in Tomb Raider 3.
So it's worth it then. Maybe I'll get really into Grand Theft Auto, I don't know. But yeah, I think it's like, I feel very lucky that a lot of the time gender is not something that's at the front of my mind. And I think that in itself is still a privilege. And I've been able to do that and live like that in a really privileged way that not many people are able to do from other factors in my life. I haven't had to push too hard to think that some stereotypes about being a woman don't apply to me or anyone. I think I've always known, or for a long time I've known that, and it doesn't like worry me in my day. Like I'm like now into my 30s, I am unmarried, I am without children, I work every day, I don't
disgusting
I know isn't when... it revolting? I like dress badly.
When's he gonna put a ring on your finger?
It's like I wouldn't even want it if it was on offer. Like none of those, I've never felt like those things would be helpful to me in my life and the way that I want to live and like how actualized I want to be as a human being.
Yeah.
So, but I think you can't tell how your brain was like broken to think that and why it hasn't happened to other people. It just feels like you're on the other side of some realization, and I'm never very good at knowing how I could like communicate that to people who don't feel like that.
No, sure. No, I get you. I guess to me, it's just like, yeah, like it has been such a central thing because it's like when society is telling you that you're supposed to be this one way, and then you see, it's like, I think the younger you are, the simpler view you have of things. And obviously like, when I was younger, like I had a much more simplistic view of gender. And I, obviously like I didn't know there was a difference between sex and gender. And I think this is one of the main things that people get confused about. And even to the point now when you hear like gender critical or turfy people say that there is no difference between sex and gender, you know, they say that gender is sex, and that there's this, they think it's like a conspiracy that that gender has been created to sort of like erase the idea of sex. But I think that's a flawed argument as well, because again, I would always go back to the sort of biological thing and say, well, no, but I mean, I'm not even trying to advocate about a difference between sex and gender. I'm trying to say that like sex itself is more complicated than sort of what you give it credit for, you know. But gender, it does most certainly exist, you know. It's like a, to me it just feels like an obvious fact, you know. There is a societal element whether you want to admit it or not, you know.
Can I ask you, when you what are elements of womanhood and being a woman that you like and think are like important in your life and you are glad you have, but that are specific to being a woman?
Well, that's the complicated thing, right? Is that, like, again, other people will tell me that I have these things, that I have these regressive ideas of what it means to be a woman and stuff. But I don't actually have things like that on the top of my mind that I can draw off as reference points. You know, it's always been more about, I think like you start with those things, right? When you're growing up, like as a trans person, like, or particularly as someone who's closeted, like you see all the things that you don't have access to or that you're not allowed to do as the things that you want, right? So that's why people think there's this like regressive idea of like, oh, you know, transition, it's all about image and it's all about clothing, and I always think it's not, you know. So this is kind of complicated. I know it's difficult for people to wrap their heads around it, but for me, like the act, for example, of like wearing makeup or dressing a certain way or even like holding myself in a certain way or talking in a certain way, it's all sort of performative to the point where I can stop doing it. Mm-hmm. So makeup is like the easiest example. Like when you first start transitioning, like people might look at you and think, wow, like you're really going hard on like the femininity thing here. Like you're wearing a lot of makeup and you're performing these rituals that, you know, feminism has fought to kind of like undermine. And the point of it is, though, is like when everything else is against you, when you feel like you look quite masculine and you are, there is a level of overcompensation, you know, because you want to pass a certain way. But where I am in my life now is like I want to be at a point where I don't feel like I have to do that anymore, you know, where feel like, for me, like femininity or womanhood, for lack of it, because I don't even think femininity should be reserved for womanhood, you know. I think that's
completely
one of the things that people don't talk about enough is that, like, you know, like I don't believe this is the problem. I mean, I'm rambling again a bit, but this is the problem that I have, is like people tell me that I think a certain way and that I am a certain way and I don't feel like that. And I guess you could question and say, well, ultimately then what's the point, you know? Why do you want to do this, you know? Why do you feel like you have a place within womanhood? Why can't the question is always, why can't you just be a very effeminate man, right? Mm-hmm. And the answer to that is, I don't know. I don't know why I can't do that, but I can't. You know, there's something in my brain that says I can't do that. And this is why people get frustrated with us, because it's like, it does sometimes verge into this sort of hokey, sort of like spiritualist side where it's like, you know, I'm a woman trapped in a man's body, which I've never truthfully believed that. But I guess the answer to your question is like, I don't know. Like it's complicated.
And I think it's really interesting and like actually really nice to hear you say that, because I feel the same, that it's like, being a cisgendered woman naturally born from birth, whatever the many ways of defining it are, is like, I too also think if I had to sit down and like properly draw out what in me made me a woman, they would not be intrinsic things about my character or things that couldn't fall into other definitions or reasons. And then sometimes I'm not doing things that are like societally expected of women. And then sometimes I am. And I think that in and of itself should be the like absolute tell of how complex and ephemeris and flimsy in some ways the trick of it is.
Yeah, and it sounds, you know, this is the problem, is like it can sound quite hippy-dippy-ish, like what I'm about to say, right? In terms of like, it's a little bit maybe like overly hopeful or whatever, but the way that it's obviously not the way that I do see the world, but it's the way that I try to see the world, and it's the way that I would want to see the world. In an ideal scenario is that like when I meet somebody, I don't first instantly think of them as a man or as a woman. I think of them as a person, right?
Yeah.
And like, to me, it's just personhood should trump sex. But I understand that where we are in society now, that doesn't work. You know, it's something that, you know, because women have a lot of things that need to be sorted out. Do you know what I mean? Like, feminism is still very much a needed thing. So in order to have that kind of us and them mentality, like, I understand it. But I guess, like, I would just hope that it won't always be that way. And that's not to say that I want to, again, I feel like I constantly have to be careful about what I say, because I know like, anything I say can be used to say, oh, well, look, you're clearly trying to erase womanhood. You want to abolish or like sex, and you just want everybody to be a sort of, like, you know, a boring just like beige sort of existence kind of thing. And that's not true. It really isn't. It's really not what I want at all. I just want people to do what they want to do, you know, as long as they're not hurting anyone else. And that's it.
Completely. And I think it's like, you have to, it's a good, I think if we, like, genuinely studied proper, like, LGBTQ history, which I obviously never did in a school or in any academic setting, and it was, like, all these things are erased from our history in all kinds of ways, but it's, like, when you learn about, like, Marsha P. Johnson, and you're, like, oh, the person who, like, started the LGBTQ rights movement was a trans woman, and that movement has made everything better for heterosexual women as well. It's like, it is better for everyone that you don't get beaten up and put in prison as much as you would once have done for being gay. Like, it's better that we don't live in a world where people are, like, violently punished as much for just, like, expressing themselves and going about their business in a way that has literally nothing to do with anyone else at all. And it's like, yeah, I fundamentally also just think, like, any kind of moral panic, the speed at which moral panics shift and move across our society really undermines the importance of any kind of moral panic. Like, it just finds a new target every so often. And if you can start to spot the fact that it, like, jumps and moves, how can you take it seriously wherever it lands? Mm. Yeah, and these things, exactly, back to words again. It's like the definition even of any of these things shifts and changes over time. I did this class called Madness and Mental Health, which the whole point of the class was just to discuss how the definitions of those words, madness and mental health, have veered so violently over time that it's like, you can only say in a moment situated what they mean, because they meant something completely different before.
Yeah.
I don't really see why it's like, but the thing that unites us is a vagina.
Sure, yeah. And it's interesting, right? Because a lot of these arguments come down to, funnily enough, like, dictionary definitions.
Yeah.
And a lot of the... So whenever you hear somebody say, you know, a woman is an adult female, like, person, right? Adult human female, which has become almost like a slogan for some gender critical movements. There's this really good YouTuber that I like called Katie Montgomery, and she's like a trans YouTuber, and she's more than that, obviously, but that's what she does. She talks about trans issues sometimes. And one of the things that she did in a video, she sat down with a biologist, and they basically just talked through the term adult human female, and they broke it down word by word, basically, and they analyzed, you know, the history of the word, like, adult, firstly, and how many scenarios in which adult can be misinterpreted, can have different meanings. And I know this as well, for example, from working in care and things like that, is that, like, you know, mental capacity and just, not to say that someone would, I mean, this isn't what I'm saying, is I'm not saying someone with learning disabilities or whatever isn't an adult, but what I'm saying is they are treated in a way, or they can be treated in a way, that is at odds with how we perceive like a definition of adulthood, which is like freedom or a prisoner or anything, right? Like a prisoner, you could argue, make an argument for why they're not they don't fit the definition of an adult.
But even if you look at like teenagers, right? Like the category of teenager is new. Like in Dickensian times, like you were a child and then you were an adult, probably when you were about 13. It's exactly. Like there was no teenager. That category didn't exist.
And it's things like consent, right? Like legal age of consent and stuff, and how it's different in different places, and therefore like people or drinking age, things like that. It's like in America, you know, the definition of what an adult is significantly different from what the definition of an adult is here. Over here, like when you're 16, you're pretty much regarded as an adult, you know, like you're certainly tried as one and mm-hmm. you're certainly allowed to, well, you used to be allowed to go out and buy cigarettes and stuff, but you know what I mean.
Classic adult stuff.
Exactly. But you're allowed to like join the army and things like that when you're 18. But in America, you know, you have to be 21, and that might seem trivial, when somebody is using rigid dictionary definitions to try to tell you something about who you are, it's very difficult to take them seriously because the dictionary, different dictionaries have different definitions, and all dictionaries are subject to change. And completely. All dictionaries do change, and it's just a dictionary, it's just written by someone, you know? So yeah. It just seems weird to me. A dictionary is not a, you know, it just isn't. It isn't a legal document. It isn't like a...
And if it's your fear is that it will change the definition of you, which I think ultimately is always the fear. It's like, what will happen that changes the definition of me? I think a lot of people need to sense check to be like, first of all, will this impact me? And secondly, will it actually impact me in a bad way? Or maybe will it impact me in a good way?
Well, yeah, I mean, there you go. It's like that thing about, you know, one of the big debates at the moment is about the word like lesbian and, you know, if, you know, should a lesbian woman have to find a trans woman attractive? Well, obviously the answer to that is no. Like, and obviously no, I've never seen a situation where anyone is forcing somebody else to find someone else attractive. It's absurd, right? But the thing that you don't hear people talk about as much is like, what happens in the scenario where there's a woman, a cisgender woman, she's lesbian, she self-identifies as a lesbian since forever. She loves being a lesbian, that is, but not just in terms of who she's attracted to, but also in terms of the culture and other things that come along with it. She sees a woman and she finds that woman physically attractive through no fault of her own. Mm-hmm. She then comes to find out that that woman is a trans woman. What does she do? Does that devalue who she is? Does that change who she is? I would argue no, it doesn't. You know, I would say that like they haven't been tricked. It's like it's just you physically find attractive what you find attractive, right? So it just seems very insecure and weird that people would feel like one invalidates the other. And I think what it comes down to is just this idea of like, it just proves that categorization, like rigid categorization, is a problem, and we should try to move away from it as much as we
completely,
can.
Completely.
Now, you know, not to say that I'm not saying there shouldn't be lesbians. All right, I've got a lot of lesbian friends and I like them and they're lovely. But it just seems weird to put that over.
But I see why people have done it, right? Like people have formed groups and identities in like a protective way to feel comfortable, to be like amongst like-minded people. I was actually thinking about this the other day with myself, because it's like I have only in my life been in heterosexual relationships with men. But I do really, I like really believe in the Kinsey scale. Like I would never, first of all, I'd never be like, I'm proudly a straight person. Like I think that would be, it would, even if I felt it, I wouldn't be like, this is a part of my identity that is important for me to share with other people. But maybe that's because I assume it's the norm, but I don't think I do. But I also have always kind of struggled with where to insert myself into the kind of like conversation around queerness, because I also don't think that's a part of my identity in practice. I guess what I'm saying is like I've not had to be in a situation where I've felt like my sexuality is being so assumed from the outside that I've had to like embrace it as an identity and feel like that was an important thing for me to wear on the outside. And I think that in and of itself in some ways is a privilege.
So again, even within like certain like LGBT communities, there's this whole thing about like, oh, you know, if we keep adding letters to the acronym and letting everybody else in, then at what point does it just stop being the gay community kind of thing? And it's and I feel like, again, I understand where that thought process comes from. And there probably was a point where I can tell you there was a point when I probably like agreed with that. I don't anymore. And I feel like I agree with it in practice, in terms of like, yeah, like the acronym will look pretty ugly. Like it's a very like long, hard to remember acronym. Like that's not good. But in terms of like letting everybody in, like ultimately that is kind of what I want, because although I understand that it's important to have our own space now, that's just because of the circumstances that we're apparently in. It's more like, what I want is I want everybody to get along. Like even if I go to like a gay club, I don't want to see it like swarming with straight people like certain gay clubs in Brighton. But I don't want there to not be any in there. You know, I think it's important that we see each other's lives and that we intermingle and learn and know each other. You know, otherwise it's just separatism, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, it's like, also, again, it's like, who is the enemy here? And for me, as a, I guess, heterosexual, cisgendered woman, it's like extremely apparent that the enemy is patriarchal masculinity. Like the enemy is not gay people or trans people, like any type of like variation of identity that's just about like expressing yourself and finding the people you want to be around and like finding a source of like pleasure and comfort in your life. It's like we are all suffering from patriarchy. Like this is the force of negativity in the world. You and I, we touch on entertainment, right? And it's like we're in that world a little bit professionally, and like once when you're in those spaces, it's even harder to draw those lines, because it's like people obviously can behave and become and experiment with like different lives and ways of living, and like the I guess it's like the performativity of existence. And I also can see how that is weaponized against people to be like, well, if you're just performing, you're performing. But it's like everyone's performing, come on, everyone's performing all the time. It just, you just sometimes in entertainment get to see the artifice of it lifted a little bit or like made a little bit more apparent.
No, I mean, this is what I was kind of trying to say earlier, is that like when one thing that I noticed about, you know, when I came out, is that like you come out, but you're doing it for you, but you realize quite quickly how it makes other people feel like that are close to you, but how other people feel about them. Like, when you come out, you come out for everybody. So for example, like when I came out, I was with somebody, I was in a relationship, and then that throws into question how people perceive your partner, and they have questions for them, like, well, what are you, what does that make you, does that mean that you're, it's like you drag people into the LGBT community, right? Yeah, I just think that's interesting. I just think there's a lot more room for other people than sometimes people in the LGBT community realize or want there to be. I do agree that maybe like furries and stuff should probably stay out. I'm not ready for them yet, but
I do.
I'm joking, by the way.
I do have a more permissive space in my mind for like. I mean, I just have like zero tolerance for like turfy behavior, because I think it's like you have not been oppressed to the extent that you think you've been oppressed in this situation. Whereas when I hear like I don't want to know, a lot of turfs are lesbians, but I have more sympathy for people who've like carved out spaces in an impressive environment and want to protect those spaces. But I guess those two things do overlap. But I guess it's just like I'm so disappointed in some women being just like really unnecessarily closed-minded about this whole thing in a way that does not impact them at all, and often based on like really stupid bitch shit that's like, oh, like someone brought up with me the It's like the trans women in toilets thing, or like, do you think that trans women should be allowed to do a rape in prisons? And it's like, what you are discussing with me here is an issue of consent. It's like actually not an issue of gender at all. Do I think anyone should have to look at anyone else's genitals that they don't want to? No. Do I think that anyone should be sexually assaulted anywhere? No. Like, that is not a gender issue. Like, that is a consent issue.
Well, I was thinking about this recently as well, is this idea of like, so, you know, the trans women in sports debate, like one of the things about that that's not just related to sort of trans women apparently all being, you know, incredible athletes who will defeat any any woman, it's also to do with the fact of like, well, if, what about sports in schools, you know, what if, how can we have it where the girls' changing room is now full of, you know, biological males and stuff, like, who identify as girls, like that's something that people are genuinely talking about. And I suppose, like, what I always think is I think back to when I was at school, and I went to an all boys school, and I used to have to, you know, I had to change with all the boys and stuff, and I felt incredibly uncomfortable, and I did not enjoy that at all.
Yeah.
And what I wanted was, I just wanted somewhere where I could change on my own. I didn't have a desire to change with another type of person. I just wanted to do it on my own. And I sometimes think, well, if people, you know, to me, that's the ultimate option is privacy. But if you are a school or some kind of institution, and you would prefer to have all gender changing rooms as opposed to separate changing rooms, sorry, single gender changing rooms as opposed to separate changing rooms, why is that? Like, is it because you are clinging on to this old-fashioned,
yeah, it's interesting,
sense of communal bonding, or is it something more sort of suspect? Like, I don't know, there's just something weird to me about that status quo. Like, I and I'm not a prudish person, like, I'm not like anti-pornography or anything like that, but we're not talking about that, we're talking about children, right? And I just think it would be safer for everybody, and it makes more sense that all children be given privacy in those
completely
scenarios.
And learn about privacy and are confident in their sense of privacy and when they're allowed it, and that they're not just being observed when they take their clothes off. I get that people want to like wrangle little kids all in one place, but it's like, yeah, you know what, I don't hear many great stories coming out of like a children's school changing
Everyone's
room situation.
Got a story, haven't they, about that?
So it's like, why are we fighting for that when it's like, obviously you should just be fighting for privacy and separation and the ability for everyone to feel just like confident and not attacked in their own bodies wherever they are.
And it's the same as the toilets debate, right? It's like, well, sure, like most people, I can't imagine, like, okay, so say you're out at a cafe and you say you're in a cafe and like Costa or something, other companies are available.
And, Jen's choice,
I know. And you go to the person in the cafe and go, excuse me, I need to go to the toilet. Can I have the door code? They give you the door code. You go over to the toilets. You notice, oh no, this is a single unisex toilet. You're not gonna demand that Costa now also have a female only toilet with multiple stalls in it. Like, you're gonna be perfectly happy with that. If anything, you're gonna be more relieved to have that because it's gonna have more space for you. It has a nice mirror.
Oh, completely. The artifice of it is so stupid. I remember a couple of years ago when the toilet debate was like really at the forefront of the media. I was in America and I was at a train station waiting to go somewhere, and I needed to use the bathroom. So I stood outside the women's cubicle with a little woman on the side, and then there was a man standing outside the men's cubicle next to me with a little man on the side, and we both were waiting for a really long time, and then this like spotty little employee came over with an out of order sign and stuck it on the men's door, and then then the man just like took a step behind me into the ladies' queue. And I was like, oh man, we literally just solved the gender toilet issue. It's like, who even cares? Who even cares? It was a single stall, so it was like not relevant who uses that toilet.
And you see it all the time. Like, if you're lucky enough to remember the days when you used to be able to go to like a club or something, you see it all the time, you know. It's something I've seen so much, is like, you always get like that one like woman who is like, oh, forget this line, and then
yeah, it goes in the men's
toilets. It's like, it's just, and also if you go to like gay bars and stuff, they have unit, they have like toilets that are a gender critical person's absolute nightmare, you know, like they are literally unisex to the max, you know, they're stall doors open, you know, people like broken doors, people just like men, women, everybody like just going in there.
It's just like, I can't give any more of my life or interest into who uses which public toilet. I cannot engage with that anymore. Like, I am so sorry for people who it's like keeping them up at night, the thought that something might happen to them in a toilet. I really hope nothing happens to anyone in a toilet. I think probably statistically more bad stuff happens to trans people than cis women in semi-private spaces like that. And I think we're all really misdirecting our concern. We should be trying to get into the toilet and out of the toilet as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I mean, just anecdotally, like, you know, I can't speak for other people, but, well, I can. I can speak for the entire trans community. I'll do that now. As a trans person, toilets, public toilets for me have been like a real sort of up and down sort of journey, in the sense of like, I can go in one now with pretty much, you know, like without thinking too much about it. But at the start of my transition, it was this big issue, you know, like, where do I go? What do I do? And I was very like apologetic and very sort of like, I wanted to do the right thing. You know, I didn't want to make anyone uncomfortable. And at my uni, I was like, oh no, I'll use the disabled toilet if that's okay, and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, I have spent more time than I am sort of like proud to admit, like just hiding in a cubicle.
Yeah, yeah.
Just waiting for everybody to leave because, you know, the threat is real. You know, I have had comments. I have had people say things, and it has happened to me. You know, like, it's not, it doesn't happen often, but it has happened enough times for me to be wary of it. The thing about that is I don't want anybody to feel uncomfortable. You know, that's not my aim. And it makes me sad that anyone would feel uncomfortable with my presence in there, because I am usually just literally trying to get in and out as quickly as possible. But with the sort of like rape thing, saying like, oh, you know, if you allow trans women into the toilet, or rather if you allow people who self-ID into the toilet, anyone can now access that and you could get raped, right? The issue with that is obviously is that there's nothing stopping anybody entering any toilet. Except for like at Waterloo, where you have to put like 20p in. there's economic factors to it, but there's nothing to stop
Completely.
You asked me a question earlier. I was just wondering, is that your one question for a trans woman that you were going to ask me? Or do you have any others? Because I'm now inviting you, if you want to ask me anything you've ever wanted to ask a trans woman ever. No holds barred.
Lovely. So I would like to ask you, when on your journey towards being a trans, maybe you always felt like you were a trans woman, so maybe that's part of it, but it's like, when have been moments where you've just felt like really pleased and happy, and like things have felt like they were right? What have been the markers of things moving in the right direction for you?
Oh, that's a good question. So I have this problem where like I any good thing that happens, I then instantly just like completely dismiss it away.
Yeah, of course, so, always.
Yeah. So they're all forgotten, but there certainly are things. Funnily enough, like, it's some of the most rewarding moments are moments before I even transitioned, weirdly. Is anything that makes you feel justified in your own sort of like idea about yourself. For example, I don't think, looking back, that I was a particularly feminine looking sort of, you know, teenager, but I certainly did have like long hair, and like my fashion sense was a little bit out there, and I was a bit gothy, and you know, like I had like a choker and all this kind of stuff. And there were a couple of times when I was like, anytime that I was sort of like mistaken for, or like there was once, I have a very distinct memory of being with one of my friends in KFC in Bromley, and we were lining up, and this old woman was like, to my friend, was like, oh, is this your girlfriend? Like, she's very pretty. And I just remember thinking, like, I remember pretending to be really put out by it.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? But secretly being like, no, this is validation, you know, this is like something that I feel. Not I didn't want to be their girlfriend, but I just was like,
yeah, being like someone seeing you on the outside for what you just a little bit are like, oh.
And looking back, she was very old and she probably did have some kind of cataract, so it probably wasn't I thought it was, but yeah, like, well, how about that then? Wasn't that an insightful, wonderful chat? I really enjoyed it. I hope you did as well. Again, I'd just like to thank you all for listening. I'd like to thank you all for your lovely feedback and support. On that subject, I'm going to start giving a shout out to my Patreons, because I've always wanted to do that. Patrons, that you say patrons or Patreons or whatever. I'm giving a shout out to them because I did start a Patreon account. And it is for charity, for the duration of this podcast, or for as long as I still have a job, actually. The Patreon will be going towards, the money collected for it will be going towards three charities. Those charities are Gendered Intelligence, Black Lives Matter UK, and Rise UK. I was kind of overwhelmed that I had some people who actually signed up for the Patreon, you know. It's really nice thing to have support. I'm not gonna lie, you know, this podcast would have been made without the support of patrons, because as I said, the money is going to charity, but that's why it means so much more to me that people are still donating anyway. If you would like to give to my Patreon, as I said, the money is going to charity and you will get exclusive bonus extra things. You know how Patreon works. I'm talking, there's an exclusive podcast that I'm doing at the moment. Hasn't started yet, but it will within the next week or so, which is literally only for my Patreons for the next 10 weeks. Exclusive YouTube videos, exclusive photos and blogs and all kinds of lovely stuff. So you can subscribe to my Patreon. It's patreon.com/peak_trans. Like just peak trans, but with an underscore, you know, it's like a dash, but lower down. Thank you so much to my Patreons, Alice Lee, Lanus, River Shaw, Mike Sheldon, and Siobhan Doyle. You are appreciated. You are, you're the best. You're super cool. So, as always, I've been Jen Ives. You can follow me on Twitter at Jen Ives Comedian, and you can go on my website, jenives.net. I hope you have a nice week. Try to stay out of trouble. I'm still trying to figure out like a sign-off phrase. I don't know. What do you think? Stay out of trouble, be nice, and always eat your broccoli. Anyway, yeah, just have a nice week. That's all I want. That's all you need to do. You know, it's COVID times. It's hard, right? If you can just have a couple of good days, order a pizza, watch a nice film, you know, and don't be too hard on yourself. Anyway, bye. Bye-bye. But you hang up first. No, you hang up first. All right, bye.